Well, good afternoon. Sure is nice to be back. And it's wonderful to see you. Do you know everybody here? Probably not. Let's do introductions around.
Donald and
Britt.
Wendy.
With you.
Jane.
Julian.
Yes.
Been a long time. So glad you're here. I've just been in New Mexico, where there was still snow on the ground where we were. Not a lot, just big mounds. It had gone up to the roof of the Zendo. It was huge. Jean, one of the teachers who lives out there on a mountain, said she and her husband got to the point where even though they shoveled and threw the snow over their shoulder, they couldn't get it up high enough anymore. It was so high. It just kept falling and falling and falling. So it was not like this at all. It was very, very, very different. Tiny little bit of green coming out on the trees, just the littlest, palest green. Very beautiful. I just was doing my homework for the meeting this afternoon. When this is over, we're going to talk about the last two chapters of Shantideva. And he was talking about what I wanted to talk about, which is about a solitude. It has many, many levels, that subject. In Buddha's time, when people came to Buddha with problems or with arguments, especially with arguments, our confused mind, he would often say, why don't you go find a hut or a tree or a cave and just sit down for a while. He didn't really chastise people at all, but if he felt that they were off track, he just sent them off to be alone, just to be by themselves. He didn't say, go and stay there and never darken my door again, but just go and cool down. Find a place where you're not overstimulated and overinformed, and just sit down and be with yourself for a while. I've been sort of watching myself and my friends and how things work, not only here, but even in a little town like Arcata, or an even littler town like the Hokoji Sangha, how driven we feel to be doing. And how strange it often feels and kind of alien, almost like we're turning our back on the world to just be quiet for a little while. It's as if everyone is pulling us to them. We're herd animals. We're like horses. We run together. That's what Sangha is how it is that we are of one mind. In one sense, we're all of one mind. Even in the cultural sense, we are so conditioned by our culture that, of course, we run together. And we panic together, and we celebrate together. There's something very touching and beautiful about that. But also something not quite true about it also. And how we separate that out, how we sort it out, is one of the challenges of our practice. How we know for ourselves what is our way, which may not be what everyone else wants it to be. That's why Zazen is about getting to be good friends with ourselves. Most of us have a very good judge and jury and police system in our mind to keep us on the straight and narrow, doing right. But to develop an encouragement and an appreciation and a deep study for what this is, what this effort is, that's our practice. Beyond right and wrong, beyond good and bad, beyond what they say. And living alone, I have discovered, to my surprise, is not the same as solitude. At least in one way it's not, because there are so many things always to do. And the kind of solitude that Buddha was talking about was not running around doing something inside as opposed to doing it in town or at work or with one's friends. To really be alone is that backward step that Dogen was talking about. To step back and turn around and just be here. So, finding ways of doing solitudinous practice in the midst of a very busy life in a very huge urban area isn't easy. And yet there are big ways of doing that. And there's the Vedanta Center on Point Reyes, very cool place to go. It costs as much as you want to pay. And you can stay as long as a week. And it's completely quiet. You can take long, long walks all through the forest at Point Reyes. Your own room, your own bathroom. Very cool place. There's the Vajrapani just down here outside of Boulder Creek. You get your own little cabin up on the top of a hill, and they bring you food once a day, hot food in a little container, and then you can heat it up for supper after you've had lunch from it. Also a very cool place. And there's nothing to tell you what to do or be. No one to even notice what you're doing or being. And in a way it's refreshing, and in another way, of course, it's very challenging. You really hit that place of, what is this then? What am I for? Who is it? Kobin always said, never go off into the woods without telling somebody that you're there. So that although it feels solitudinous, you're still completely connected, at least with one other person. Because without that, we lose our moorings. And it's not about losing our moorings. It's not floating off into the Imperium and disappearing in the clouds somewhere. It's about coming back here. I like that Buddha suggested that people find a tree to sit under. He did that. Some people say he sat for 7 weeks under that tree. Others that it was 7 days. But those big old trees in India, which are just like sycamore trees, they're actually fig, but they look like sycamores with those big branches, big leaves, clusters of leaves, make a real shelter. And I think one thing that we need more and more is the sense of shelter. To find our protection. Of course, rich people pay for it. You know, you can hire a cop or live in a closed, gated community. Actually, none of that is safe at all. It's our big work to find where we abide. Where, in spite of the dangers and the strangeness and the unpredictability of everything, that something abides of us, something that we can trust, in which we can have faith. Here, where we are. There's a little talk on the internet by Myotai. Maybe I've spoken about this before, where she talks about doing a retreat at home. Homemaker's retreat, or home, not homemaker, something like that. Where you just set aside a whole day and it's for just being mindful and sitting only. You have to arrange it with your family, if you have a family. And when I spoke about this on a Wednesday night, somebody said, oh, she does that and sets it up with her husband so that he comes, she closes herself in the study, and that's her room for the whole day. And then he'll tap on the door and present her with a cup of coffee. Or at lunchtime, a little lunch. She says it's so nice because he's sort of participating also, but giving her all the space and time that she needs for it. I know we don't all have partners, and we don't all have partners who would do that. I know my partner never would have. But it's a beautiful idea on which we can be creative about how we could set it up for ourselves. There are many stories, especially in the Theravadan tradition, of women who just didn't have time to practice in a formal way and simply were mindful every time there was a spare moment and became enlightened that way. All of these various ways of turning this subject are about that, about how to come home to ourself, come home to Buddha, to Dharma, to Sangha, And so it's possible if we are strong enough and passionate enough about our practice to practice at home in solitude. Nyotai says it's okay to talk, but not to answer the telephone. So no telephone, no computer, none of those things. So you simply exist in your space as completely awake as you can possibly be. What is easy to notice is how unawake it is to be easy to be. And how much on automatic we are. Going from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. So this practice of stopping, even if it's mindful stopping for five breaths, all the practices that Thich Nhat Hanh suggests, stopping when the clock rings, stopping when the phone rings, letting it ring three times before we answer, creating in our own space ways of bringing ourselves back to where we are. Then it doesn't have to be so special. It's always a little special to go to Vajrapani or to the Vedanta Center and uproot ourselves, and then it begins to feel like there are two worlds. Sesshin is like that also. There's the Sesshin world and then there's everything else. The truth of it is that isn't the way the world is. I first got hints of that when, instead of just practicing with Koban, we started trying to buy Jikoji and get a use permit for it, all of which is very crunchy business kind of stuff. And suddenly we weren't, you know, wearing rock shoes and sitting like this. We were getting dressed properly and going down to the county and talking to bureaucrats and persuading the open space district to respect us. And there was a lot of work involved, insurance people and getting the septic tank fixed and all of these things. And at first I thought, you know, what about my practice? My practice. And then I began to feel how it was that all of that was about practice. And that as long as we were doing it for, in this case, Jikoji, the project of Jikoji, it all made perfect sense that it was practice. And then I began to feel how separated out my family life felt from all of that. There was another two worlds. And then I thought, well, you know, if all beings are members of our Sangha, then not just my family, but the neighborhood, the town, the city, the country, the world, there, and then the universe. That's what Koban really meant. All beings are members of our Sangha. So finding a way to practice with all beings, as a herd animal, and as an animal that tends to get overwhelmed, a thinking animal that tends to get overwhelmed by its ability to think. B- Buddha's simple advice all those 1,000 years ago of just going and sitting down somewhere, finding a little peace and quiet, sitting down with everyone. Which is what we've been doing here today as well. And what a gift this is. I met a neighbor on the way, on my walk. She said, "Are you from around here?" "No." All right. I said, "I'm at the Quaker Center." "Oh," she said, "I thought you might be." She said she lives in a Quaker house. It was built, the one that's completely engulfed by trees. Big palm trees and green, all sorts of trees. She said it was built by a very famous Quaker and was sorry that I didn't know who that was. But see, we're all connected too. I said, "We're sitting Zen there." "Oh, meditation," she said. "Of course, of course." So that's what's been on my mind. I hope you all have something to add or subtract. I'm open. Jane?
Koji, we were told to, I felt I was told to walk to the Zendo, not to hurry. And, yes. That doesn't really end anywhere. I mean, so when I come from home, I don't know what this has got to do with what you said. I forget why this feels like it connects, but it does. When I come from home, Tuesday night said, sometimes it starts like right in the morning, you know, like they're rushing or they're not, you know. I think that's how this practice works, that it kind of starts permeating everything. It does make you wake up, just from little tricks, sort of.
Koban always said to walk into the Zendo having already set one's mind to sitting, to be in a sitting mode. It's hard to do at 6:30 in the evening on Tuesday, having driven down that frantic freeway on rush hour, but it's very good advice. And then, of course, to stand up and carry it back into the car and back on the freeway when it's over. So it's a discipline. It's definitely a discipline. It doesn't come automatically.
But it's fun, too. I remember my friend had this big mix-up at the dry cleaner, and it was a big drama. And so she couldn't make up her mind what to do. She was there with the dry cleaner and her dressmaker, and it was a big drama. So she called me to help her out. So I drove up to the dry cleaner, and I just kind of put myself in the shoes of the dry cleaner who stood to lose a lot of money, and the dressmaker. Like, it was just so, you know, I all of a sudden felt really bad to be coming into this, and like, well, what seems to be, it could be like that, right?
Yes.
You know, whoops. And I just kind of slipped in like you do in the Zendo, and it helps. It's because then everyone's just there and it's no big deal.
Yeah.
And then, and I think that's what the practice...
Mm-hmm.
It was really interesting to see that. It was, yeah. My curiosity was okay, what's going to happen here? It's like slipping into the Zendo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm, Thank you. Ritu.
I can't remind me of that game. I still don't know if it relates to what you were talking about. But about, well, carrying it out into the world, I guess, is what we were talking about. And I just was, and I didn't realize it until now, but so this week I went to criminal court to pick up a client's criminal record. I hadn't done it before. Whether any of you have gone there, it's an adventure.
In San Francisco?
No, here in San
Francisco. Here?
Yeah. And so just the overwhelm, you know, people, like the, you can feel, and I was telling Andy that I'm feeling really sensitive lately, so I can feel everyone's energy, and, you know, nobody's happy, like, it's not a happy place. No matter who you are, even, like, security guard, I'm like, where's the clerk's office? He's like, no. And so I get to the clerk's office, and I'm watching all the interactions, and everyone's upset. The people behind the counter are upset, the people asking for help are upset, and it's like building and building, and the attorneys come in, and that's the worst part. I'm an attorney, and I was accounting, I'm like, how many times are you going to say it? I'm an attorney, no, we can't do that, but I'm an attorney, we can't do it. So it's like, and then I get to the window, so that's all brought into it, and it reminded me of that story about the waitress and the sessioning, and can you hear that story?
No.
So the quick that story is that somebody, I forgot who, a teacher, went to a...
Oh, Charles's story. Where he was so grumpy the first time he saw her, and then after Sesshin, he was...
No, what a great... She changed
totally.
So I had kind of an experience like that too, because I get to the window and the person's like not nice to me, and I'm like, I don't know what to do. And she's asking all these questions, and she couldn't find my file, and finally she found it. She's like, well, and I said, well, all I have to do is get a copy of it. I want a copy of it. She's like, oh, I can't do that. And I've been waiting and all this stuff. I'm like, and I was like, well, why can't you? And she's like, well, if you, I'm like, well, can I come back and get it? She's like, well, I can't make the copies unless you leave me a check. And we don't have a check. I don't have cash. And she's like, only can take checks. So I was like, back and forth. And I'm like, how about I'll just like leave you some cash? And I'm like, just count the pages. And I'm like, no, we can't take cash. And I'm like, okay. And then she's like, there's so many people. And she's like, all frazzled. She's like, there's so many people. And I look up behind me, and all of a sudden there are like, you know, five people behind me too that I had. And I'm like, oh, that's true. And so I'm just standing there, and it was good for me because usually I get frazzled for that. I was just like standing there. She's like, you need to make a decision. I'm like, what are the options? And then she's like, you want me to copy some of it now? Or are you going to copy? And there were like 10 options. You know? And then I just like, I don't even know what I said. And then she went off and to make the copy. And then when she came back, we were like both like nice to each other. And, you know, and we worked it out. And she was going to keep it for me. And I was like, when is a good time to come back? And I think... usually I get caught up in it. And in that moment, I wasn't conscious. It felt a little, and I think that's what changed, a little removed from it.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can slip in. Maybe, you know, take a step back.
Yes. Yes.
I had another question.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just
ask a third? Yeah. Is it really feeling like... Because I'm trying to come, you know, think of words or... always available for me, but is it really being removed from it or seeing yourself that you're a part of the whole thing? Because I kind of know that feeling. You know?
Yes.
Someone described it to me as quoting Suzuki Roshi, that little passage where he says, give your cow a lot of room, a big field, and that's about zazen, I think. That Roshi is talking about, but the one who said it to me said he does it in terms of relationship, that if he gives the meeting, whatever the meeting is, a big enough space, that then there's room for that one as well as this one. It sounds like that's kind of what you did. You gave her enough room to breathe and to decide wisely what to do. Rather than pushing her.
It's hard to do, kind of like, of course, you want to just get in there and just be like, but who cares about everyone else? This is me.
This is me. Personal, but this is me.
Yeah. Just because these other people are yelling at you, I didn't. Or, you know, I have a reasonable request, and I don't understand.
That's very important how that works. Face to face. Because that's us all the way through.
So I'm related back to what you're saying. But I think it's hard to do when you get on autopilot because you don't see it.
You can't.
You
have blinders then.
Yeah. And so I think it is important to, like, you're talking about solitude. And my question or comment was, you're talking about solitude by having, like, kind of special, even at home, have a special thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what about every day? And what about creating a space that you every day that you have that's removed yet part of everything? You don't have solitude.
Well, having even half an hour of sitting every day makes a huge difference. To start the day that way it changes how the rest of the day goes. I mean, they've measured it. At Harvard, they've done a lot of measurements of the brain changes from zazen. And even 10 minutes, they say, makes a difference in how your brain takes in and deals with what comes. So that, I think, is probably the most important fundamental, is just to allow ourselves the luxury, it seems like, because it seems there's so many things to do, we just can't possibly give ourselves enough time. But that, I would say, is one. And then two is a continual mindfulness practice, which just takes, sitting down to breakfast and noticing all the bites that you take and the flavor of the day and the fragrance of the wind and, the ring of the telephone, all of those things, to let them bring you back to where you are rather than shooting out into the world of ideas. It means a very simple life, even if you're living a very complicated way. It makes things very simple, and sometimes people think it's boring. No, because nothing's happening except, all these dumb things. There must be something more. And then we can cook up something more. We can create dramas out of whatever happens. But if we just keep coming back to where we are and just appreciating it, even if it's not in our favor often, if the dry cleaner really messes up or something, or the lady at the counter, we can make room for that and be present for it. We can do it. It's how we decide.
What about, like, is there such thing as, like, too much room? Yesterday I was working on a project that felt stuck. Okay, that feeling of stuckness where you need to be doing something, but you just can't do it, proceed. So, like, I have Guitar Hero, and I play a little bit of it, but it's, there's a danger of not going back to what you really need to do.
Yes.
It's tricky. But, I think it was like, just going, doing something else. And I think it helps if it's really simple, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes the simple isn't so simple, but, pressing a button when you need to press a button and, kind of have this coordination going on kind of help. I don't know. I have this idea that loosens.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the more we know ourselves, the more we know what things work for us. Taking a walk will do it too. Just to break. The brain tends to set itself into what we call icons. Very fixed notions, very fixed ideas. Things are this way, this way, this way, and then we work with those. Crunch, crunch, crunch. And anything that can break those icons, and often just a short walk will free our mind up so that we can take in much more and allow the non-thinking part of us to function and inform us. We get caught in what we think is our great mind of thinking, and it's so limited. And the only way we do real creative work is to allow the whole thing to function and to tell us what it is. You know? And often just sitting zazen in the middle of a big puzzle and just letting the whole thing fall off, and it just begins to cook or to work and feel free enough to inform us. I think most of our information comes that way. You know, from the source rather than from how we figure it all out.
The brain is an organ as much as anything else. These roads and there's a bunch of traffic going on. And you gotta just kind of drop it sometimes.
Wendy?
Yes. In this solitude at one's home, would listening to music have a role?
If you really love music, I think it would.
So it's not sensory deprivation?
No, it's not deprivation. It's just anything that keeps oneself from being lost, basically. In music, we find ourselves again.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's enough.